guys. This is Yannick Silver, and welcome to another Maverick Business Insider interview. With us, we have a Maverick 1000 member, Ron Ipack. And I've known Ron for, I don't know, going on quite a while. I'd say in the neighborhood of, I don't know if I was going to make a guess, in the neighborhood of probably about eight years, maybe even longer. And Ron and I share some of the same sort of background. Dan Kennedy was a really big mentor for both of us, and we both kind of grew up and honed our chops inside niche marketplaces. And Ron's is the auto repair world, where he has, actually I'll have to get an update from you, Ron, but last I heard, 3,500 plus auto repair shops that were using his products and services and helping them market in the auto glass world as well. And then I grew up in the cosmetic surgeon dermatology niche, and that's how you and I think originally met, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So, and then Ron has a great story where he's really one of the best poster childs for just enjoying his lifestyle and creating businesses that work all around his lifestyle, instead of trying to fit it in every once in a while where you can, instead of working 24/7. And Ron owns a couple different businesses that are all around his sort of what he calls the chillaxed lifestyle. So he works poolside when the weather allows from his home or at his beach home in Florida. It's pretty rare for him to work more than 30 hours a week, and he focuses mainly on the high-value money-making tasks and have employees or outsourcers that do all the heavy lifting for him. And so we'll be talking about that, and then we'll get into our other subjects. So Ron, fill in a couple details there on your background real fast, and then we'll get going.
All right, no problem. First off, thank you very much for having me on the call today. I enjoy doing these, and I hope everybody gets some really good value out of it.
Yeah, no, I know they will. I mean, you got a great philosophy on it.
Yeah, it's just a couple updates. I think it was probably about 10, maybe 11 years ago, because you were in Dan's group when I started, I believe.
Yeah, I got going in 99, really, full-time, 98,
okay, yeah.
just getting going.
Yeah, I started in 2000, so it was around 2000, I think, that we started, so my how time flies. and I'm up to a little over 5,000 auto repair shops that I'm working with.
That's awesome.
So things continue to grow. I've come up with a lot of different products, a lot of different philosophies that I've kind of honed over all those years, and now to the point where, I'm enjoying life. It's going great. Challenges are met with more of a smile than a worry.
Well, that's a good position to be in. All right, so let's dig in a little bit, because I'm sure it wasn't always like this. It wasn't, let's go back, if you can remember, maybe the beginning stages, and some people are right at that beginning stage, or they got the idea, or they're trying to get something up and going. They're not sure. They're sort of spinning their wheels. This whole idea of working only 30 hours a week, is that something you think is actually achievable at the beginning, or do you think you need to put in the rocket fuel at first and then you can...
Yeah, I would say I'd be doing somebody a disservice to say that, the first thing you want to do when you're going to build your empire or your business is just, limit yourself to 30 hours. I think that would be a big disservice, because the reality is it does take work. It takes a lot of focus, it takes a lot of your attention and a lot of your passion to get things moving. It's just like that big giant boulder. You can't, getting it to roll the first few inches takes a lot of work, but once you get that momentum going, then you can, then it's easier to push it. And then, of course, as you go further and further, the momentum builds, then it's much easier to get that lifestyle. But I think it's also important in the very beginning that whatever business that you're going to build, you go into it with your eyes wide open in the very beginning, that whatever that business is something that you really want to be in, and that it supports the lifestyle that you want. So in other words, when I first started, 80-hour weeks were commonplace. well, first off, because I didn't know any better. You know, I figured that, you know, if it was going to get done, you know, it'd have to get done by me. So I didn't, you know, discover the outsourcing world. So there was a lot of big learning curve that I had to figure all the stuff out. You know, that part can be streamlined right away by just understanding you don't need to know how to do everything yourself. But on the other hand, you know, a lot of people, they build the business and then they turn around and say, this thing is just a giant time suck. Yeah, it's profitable. Yeah, there's a passion there. But if there's no time left to go out and enjoy your life, well, then you built the wrong business from the very beginning. So I think it's almost a twofold approach, that be prepared to work your butt off in the very beginning, but then also be prepared to have a business that ultimately supports what you really, really want to do.
And then how would you, like how would you evaluate that to be sure that you're on the right track as you're considering business models or you're thinking about what you're going to do?
Well, what I do, and I have these conversations over and over and over again, because I love talking with people that are just getting started with their business or even still have an idea. You know, my whole thing is, build it backwards. And, you know, the traditional approach is, okay, you've got an idea, let's go build a business around that idea. The way I tell people is, well, you know, ultimately, what do you want to do with your life? You know, what is your passion? What is the, you know, what's going to get you out of bed every single morning, you know, or even go much further? You know, what's your perfect day like? You know, so if you wake up, you know, where are you waking up? You know, what hour of the day do you want to wake up? Do you want to, you know, work on the computer for just a couple hours a day, then go surfing the rest of the day? Or are you really the type of person that, you know, enjoys, you know, putting on a suit and going to an office and spending an 8 or 9 hour day? I mean, everybody's different. I mean, that, you know, that gives me chills just even talking about that kind of lifestyle. But, you know, but that's just me. I mean, everybody is different, and that's what the beauty of this thing is. You get to choose the lifestyle you want, and then based on that, go find something that by the time you build it actually supports that. So if you're a guy that, you know, knows you're going to have to pour, you know, 60 hours a week in person at, let's say, a retail store, and you're going to build the business brand around you where people are going to be looking for you, well, understand that that's going to take time away from your family that you either have now or will have in the future. And after a while, you may not want that. So, you know, build it so that, you know, it's interchangeable, so that ultimately you can get it to the lifestyle that you want. Maybe not in the very beginning, but ultimately just look with the end in mind. Work backwards. And
you got a good example of that you've walked someone through that, or that someone's taking your advice and actually gone part of the way and done it?
Taking my advice is
or even the way that you've done it yourself. And
yeah, well, the perfect example, I built a another business just recently, the whole thing was, it had to have very little of my involvement in there, because, again, that, you know, I say I rarely work over 30 hours a week. Most of the time it's 20 hours a week is where I limit myself. It's not even a limit, it's just that, you know, I'm done. But, you know, 30 hours a week is you know, I'm still comfortable working. But I built a new coaching business that was going to require me to do all the coaching, and which is kind of difficult. But, you know, with the magic of, you know, the internet and, you know, this newfangled recording system they have, you know, of, you know, you're recording speech. I pretty much set the business up so I can record it one time and then play it over and over and over again, so it wasn't me having to be on there live every single time. Or at some other things where, you know, if I have updates, it's a matter of, you know, hey, when I'm in the zone and I'm wanting to sit down and record something, I can do that and then insert that into the business. Versus that, for the other end, one being a live coaching model that required you to be on the phone or on a webinar, excuse me, live, talking with people, you know, where you have to spend an hour a day on the phone. This way I can just record it once and replay it over and over. I mean, that's a real common thing, but I think probably...
Well, no, not necessarily. I don't even know if it's that common. I think, you know, what that sparks for me is the idea that I like, you know, when I'm talking to really, like, I actually adopted a class this year who they have a whole entrepreneurship curriculum part of NIFTY, which is a network for teaching entrepreneurship. And, you know, one of the things that I stress with them is leverage. And so many of them have businesses where they have to be the ones doing whatever they have to do. And I just want to expand their thinking into how do you leverage what you're doing, and just like you said, how do you do it one time, multiply it over and over again? How do you really switch that process of not having to be there in person, quote unquote, and that you can totally leverage your talents, your abilities, your effort, and have it work for you multiple times over.
Yeah, that's actually the perfect example of setting up the business and working it backwards. Again, because you can do it live and you can do it recording. Well, it's in how you set it up. If you start live, it's difficult then to switch to the recorded model. So that's why,
right,
I'm saying always look backwards. Look in the future of where you really want to be, and then set it up right the first time, because it's a lot more difficult to change it later on, if at all.
Yeah, so a little bit of thinking, a little bit of process, a little bit of just going out into the future and thinking along those lines. So I think that's great. You've really built up a reputation inside the automotive space, and you know, having 5,000 plus people that look to you for marketing advice and business help. Run. Talk about, I mean, you're not a mechanic, and you don't own an auto repair shop. How, you know, what's the paradigm there that you could just jump into a marketplace and really be the dominant force there without being one of them?
Yeah, that's I don't change my own oil. I mean, I lift the hood of the car and I'm scratching my head. I mean, it's just here's what I leveraged was what I know. You know, I've built up a lot of marketing knowledge. And actually, how I got started with the automotive industry is I used to own a windshield repair company. So I used to go around working on car lots and in driveways, fixing the little bullseyes and stars,
right,
in the glass. And you know, talk about a job that you're not leveraging your time at all, because you know, I got to go there and lean over a hot windshield and burn my forearms fixing the windshield, or I don't get paid. Well, that's, I can go through the whole thing, the story of, how I got involved in marketing by going to a Dan Kennedy seminar, but ultimately what it showed to me is I needed to know how to market. And then once I learned how that skill of what I developed of being really good at marketing, then I started looking for a niche that needed that help. So it was sort of backwards. Normally, you're supposed to see, find a niche and find out what they want and give it to them. But I already had my skills, so I had to find somebody to sell it to. Marketing is marketing is marketing in my case. So it doesn't matter if it was a butcher shop, a candy store, an auto repair shop, or a chiropractic office. The skill to be able to get a customer is going to be the same. It's just a matter of how you apply it. I walked into the automotive industry not really knowing a whole lot about fixing cars, but the way I look at it is I don't need to know how to fix a car. My accountant doesn't know how to market, but
yeah,
he keeps my books, he keeps the IRS off my back, because he does what he does best, and I do what I do best, which is helping people get customers.
Yeah, and what I take away from that is that so many people put these limiters on us or your own self where it's like, well, okay, well, I'm not going to be able to do this, or how am I possibly going to get credibility in this marketplace because I'm not one of them, or, there's always this internal conversation that is shooting down anything that you're thinking about. How did you get around that, or how did you just simply say, well, screw it, I know how to market way better than they do, and that's exactly why they need me?
Well, that was one. I mean, that's the approach I walked into the business with. Look, I got a skill that you need. and I'm going to go do that. Now I do things a little bit differently, and you know, because back when I started, you know, the internet was, you know, Al Gore didn't even think about it yet, I guess.
That's right.
But you know, now things have changed, and now I'm finding that the way to break into the market is just, you know, just be awesome. Just, you know, help people, you know, get a following of people that, you know, realize that you're there to help them, and things then start taking care of themselves. You know, at some point, they start asking you more questions, and that's when you have now a business that you can, you know, enter in, if that's how you want to enter into a particular niche that you really don't know a whole lot about.
Right.
You can wow them and get them asking questions, or you can sit there and pump your chest out like I did and challenge them in the very beginning. I wouldn't do that now, but, you know, things change.
And you, you know, you've really been dominant by in the publishing, information, marketing, content world. Do you still think that there's opportunity there for other people in either niche marketplaces or just any other marketplaces?
Yeah, the thing I like about it is because you leverage what you know or a skill that you can develop. So, you know, anybody that's listening to this, if you don't know anything about a study or a particular subject, just, you know, spend time in it. I forget who it was that said you spend 1,000 hours studying any particular subject, and you're now an expert in it.
Right.
I think there's space out there. But I think I think the most important thing is don't go looking into it for the dollars up front. Look for people that want to help and give them good quality information. And that's how you build a good business, not just because, oh, I want to get into information marketing and then just sell anything. You know, have something good that people want. And absolutely, I think the information marketing is a great business to be in. I still, all my businesses I create are all within the information marketing business right now, because I think it's a great place to be.
Yeah, there's so much leverage and the margins are good, and there's a lot of good benefits. Let me change directions on you slightly. So as after you got started, you were obviously putting in a lot of hours. What was that switch that you were like, okay, well, now we're going to start, I'm going to start outsourcing, or I'm going to start letting other people, you know, do other things that either I'm not excited about or don't have as much dollar value for me? Was there a moment in time, or do you think that was a gradual transition?
Oh yeah, it's a very, very memorable moment. You know, it's kind of it's one of those shocking stories that you know, you don't forget. And it was when my wife basically was, you know, she said, "I love my business more than I love her and the kids."
Mm.
And that was like, whoa, that hit me right between the eyes. And you know, and here I am thinking, you know, all along, I'm building this kick butt business and making lots of money to support my family and the lifestyle that they deserve to be. And, you know, I had my priorities wrong, when the reality was, and, you know, what that conversation showed me is, it's not the money, it's the time. You know,
yeah.
Spend more time with us and put more focus on the family. So for me, it was a kick right between the legs that you know, it took to wake me up. And I immediately at that point said, okay, enough's enough. That's, you know, I can argue with her all day long and say, no, of course not, but, you know, actions speak louder than words. So I started looking at things that I could get, you know, take off my plate. It's like, why am I doing this? When there's, you know, I can tell you every individual task, I should say almost every individual task that any business owner is going to perform, there's probably 1,000 people that can do it 10 times better. So I started looking at that and realized, okay, let's say, well, I didn't do it back then, but, you know, let's say putting up a web page. You know, I could muddle through learning how to do that and trial and error and figuring that stuff out, which, of course, goes into that 80-hour work week. Or I could just go to somebody else and pay somebody to go that already knows that information, is much more skilled than I am, and just let them do that. So it started small. It started, you know, with, actually, I think that might have been the thing, is I needed, at the time, I was trying to figure out how to put up a web page, and you know, that's before it was, you know, much easier than it is now. And I think that's the first thing I outsourced, and it cost me like $150. And I thought, oh my God, this would have taken me 2 weeks to figure out. So, you know, then it became, you know, I was an outsourcing, you know, maniac, where, you know, I started looking at everything I did, and I looked at it, well, this is either taking me too much time or I don't like doing it. And pretty soon, it didn't take long to make that transition from getting that first outsourcer to the point where most of everything I did was outsourced. I have this saying, I let them do what they do best, and I do what I do best, and I outsource the rest. So if I don't do it really good, or it's not an integral part of either making money or integral part of the business itself where I really need to be the person doing it, I let other people do that. And that's a really freeing thing to do when you realize that you don't have to do everything. And everybody, you know, wants to say, hey, I've built this business on my back and I know how to do everything, you know, there is to do. You know, I almost laugh at them and say, okay, fine, you know, I'm on the beach right now.
Right.
And I don't know half of what they know, but I don't need to know that.
Yeah, no, I think that's great. I mean, identifying what are, you know, the things that you're strong at and what you actually enjoy doing and then outsourcing the rest. Is there a game plan that you would give people for that? I mean, is it literally just go to Elance and go hire someone, or is there more to it?
Yeah, I think actually there's not a whole lot more to it. You know, you learn more as you go, but I would just, you know, get your feet wet initially. I wouldn't jump right in and make a list of 10 things you got to get rid of and then try working with 10 different outsourcers all at once.
Mm-hmm.
Start with one. You know, get a logo designed. Go, you know, have somebody write a sales letter for you, or, you know, some small sales copy, and, you know, kind of get your feet wet a little bit until you kind of develop a plan of working with an outsourcer. Because, again, every outsourcer is different. They operate differently. They have their own time schedules. Some bend over backwards and do a phenomenal job. Some are terrible. You know, and you're going to kind of work your way through that, but understand it's not a perfect world, but there are some gut feelings you can rely on. You have to keep up with it in the very beginning. But, yeah, just go to Elance, or the one I really like now is Odesk. I like Odesk.com is where I'm referring a lot of people to because they just have a little better tracking system where when somebody's working on your project, you can actually log in and get screenshots of their computer, proof that they're actually working on your project. So it's kind of cool.
That's interesting. Now, how are you keeping track of all the different outsourcers that you have? Is it inside of project management software, or is it even not that complicated, or do you have one person on your team?
Yeah, I wish I could say that there was this magic thing, and a project management software means I have to learn something yet that
yeah.
I don't want to have to learn. So I'd have to outsource somebody to do that. As a matter of fact, I've had some projects that were going on that I actually hired a project manager to manage the outsourcers. I've done that before.
You had a really big project, then you would hire the project manager to.
Yeah, because again, I'm. You know, I'm like a lot of entrepreneurs where you kind of get focused and kind of scattered, and, you know, I'm not great on follow-up, and, you know, in those cases, you know, I'm not perfect, and it's important to know where your weaknesses are and hire somebody that has strengths and, you know, where you're weak. So, but, you know, right now it's just a matter of, you know, I have an assistant, Jackie. She's been with me for, you know, a long, long, long time, she's my right arm, so I know if there's a project that really needs to be kept up on, she's brought into the loop because she's a getter-dunner, totally unlike what I am. So I think it's important to kind of surround yourself with people that are unlike you, that you like, but unlike you.
That's a great point because so often we really like people that are like us, which only means that, you know, there's already one of you. And you put more of you in there, more idea people, more, I don't know, visionary, entrepreneurial,
people.
ADD people. And all you do is you get a bunch of ideas and no execution.
Mm-hmm.
And it's absolutely correct. Well, that's good. So did you, after you got started in a small way outsourcing, and then do you just keep making a list of everything that you suck at or you hate
yeah.
Just kind of a seat of your pants sort of process?
Well, no, I mean, if you want to really, you know, systematize it, obviously you can, you know, and sit down and write everything out. You know, I kind of look at things, look at what the value of your time is, and assign a dollar amount to that. Now, I mean, I've heard a lot of different ways of doing that, but you know, whatever you value your time at, if you can hire somebody cheaper, I say go do it. So if for some reason, you know, when you're getting started, maybe you look at the value of your time at $50 an hour or $100 an hour. Okay, that's fine. Well, if you can hire somebody that can get a job done for you for $150 that would have taken you 5 hours, well, it's a no-brainer. You know, let them do it. You know, so in the very beginning, that's really how I assigned projects that needed to get done. You know, I just let somebody else do that. And it does take, you know, a little getting used to, maybe a little loss of control, because, you know, what you're going to get back isn't always the way you would have done it, but you know what? You're not perfect either. And I know most entrepreneurs have a set way of doing things. It's got to be done this way or no way. But, you know, look, there's people out there a lot more successful than you doing things differently than you. So, you know, it's yours isn't the only way.
And then that becomes a limiting, not necessarily a belief, but a limiting kind of contraction point for you that if you're only willing to let someone do it this way, then you're going to be the one doing it all the time.
Yeah, and it's hard to get, you know, but it's a hump you got to get over. But once you get over that hump as an entrepreneur, again, you know, entrepreneurs are a special breed, I think. They think differently, they act differently, they have a lot more guts than most other people do. And, you know, more trailblazers. But, you know, at some point you have to just say, you know, there are people better than I am and different things. Let them do what they do best. And you do what you do best. So it's kind of a little marriage. But it does take a little getting used to. But, boy, once you get there, you know, that's how you can then run multiple businesses, you know, seven-figure, you know, income, and work 20, 30 hours a week. But it doesn't happen overnight. Just give it time and understand that you build it right, you can get there.
And what do you think yours are? What do you focus your time on right now that you're the one that actually does it?
The thing that I actually do I'm really good at coming up with ideas. So I'm an idea guy, not a getter doner. And then coming up with the actual product itself. So, for example, you know, the new coaching group that I came up with, you know, I developed everything myself there. I did all the recording. There are some things that I do that I know I could outsource, but I just like doing them, you know. So I like messing around with audio. I like messing around with video. So those are more hobby kind of things that I can do myself.
Yeah,
so
you enjoy
it. I do a lot of audio and video.
Yeah.
But that's just fun. Could I outsource it? Should I outsource it? Yeah, probably. But, you know, then what would I do with the rest of my week, you know? but, yeah, that's mainly it. I'm more, I see in the future, I kind of develop things. I like working. I like doing a lot of coaching, but more in a group sense, you know, more on the leverage side of it, you know, one-to-many instead of one-on-one.
Right. Okay, excellent. Well, let's... let's change gears now into the, you know, lifestyle, which is kind of the second pillar that the Maverick philosophy is on. And you are certainly, I mean, we've been kind of hinting at it and running tangent to it with what you've been talking about with the outsourcing and so on. So, what, you know, you've outsourced these hours. What do you do with the rest of the hours of your time right now? And how do you think entrepreneurs should look at their lifestyle?
Well, you know, everybody has their passions. They do things differently. You know, I'll do, you know, like I said, the audio and video is kind of a hobby for me. So I'll do, you know, projects like that with, you know, home stuff, home video. But, you know, as far as the lifestyle, you know, I like to get up early in the morning. I go work out, you know, and then when I'm done, I just, you know, I actually just flop down in bed, prop up with a pillow and just start, you know, writing, doing some emails, some basic marketing things I'm going to do in the morning. But then after that, you know, I like to just go sit in the sun and read. You know, I work, you know, poolside whenever. Now I'm in Cincinnati most of the time, so you know, we don't have the greatest of of winters here. So because of that, we now have a beach condo. So, you know, we're going to be spending a lot more time down there. But, you know, I like to be outside. So I take my computer with me, and I'll go, you know, watch, you know, some new products, some new, you know, I like learning new things all the time. Not that I'm ever going to do them, but, you know, knowing that they can be done. So, you know, I do things that might be considered work-related, but I don't count those in as hours because it's just, you know, I have a thirst for learning, so I'm not going to attribute, you know, work time when I'm learning. So, you know, just, you know, I play softball, I play golf.
You got your polka band.
Yeah, I was just playing Oktoberfest this weekend, believe it or not.
Nice.
Put on my lederhosen. See, I do some really goofy stuff, you know, but I look like Shrek in lederhosen. I mean, that's...
Nice.
So yeah, I just go and have fun and you know, go have lunch with my wife whenever I want, and just both kids are now off to college, so it's kind of a little more of a transition period of what to do with those extra hours now.
And you come Baja racing with us every once in a while?
Absolutely, man. I love doing that kind of stuff. I do like doing adrenaline junkie kind of stuff, and I think that's a lot of fun with the group.
Yeah. Very good. Well, let's talk about. I mean, I know you're pretty close with the Cincinnati Children's Hospital,
yeah.
And you know, so that's part of the, you know, to give more third pillar, and that's where, you know, you told me you beat their goal for donations by 350%. I think that's pretty darn exciting. And first of all, congratulations. That's awesome.
Thank you.
And secondly, how did you do it?
Well, it was just what I knew. You know, I know about marketing, and I know about you know, enough of what the internet can do. You know, not to actually work it itself, but, you know, being the idea person. We met with them in my office, and because we had made, you know, my wife and I, we give a lot of money to a lot of different charities because I think it's important to, you know, to help people out. I mean, that really is a passion of mine. I smile when I write a big check to somebody, you know, just to give away money because I know it's going to go to a good cause. So one of the charities we gave to is Cincinnati Children's, you know, because, you know, having had kids, you know, in the emergency room, you know, for various falls and sports injuries, you know, we just were very impressed with what they did. So they invited us out, and we looked at the facility, and we just started talking with them, and just realized that this was just a, you know, we just all of a sudden had our passion. We found that the main place we want to give most of our money to. So in talking with them, I told them, you know, what I do with marketing and, you know, several businesses. And, you know, I know a lot about, attracting attention. They asked me if I would head up their spring fundraiser. And I jumped at the chance. Obviously, you know, I've got the time to do it, so, you know, why not do something good with it? So they came to me and they said this was going to be their second year doing an online fundraiser. The first year they did a little over $10,000, and you know, they'd really like, their goal was to triple that amount. And I literally laughed and I said, "You got to be kidding me!" And they said, "Oh no, I think we can do $30,000." I said, "No, we can do $30,000 in an hour. Let's take that higher." and they were just like shocked and amazed. And I think a lot of it, if anything, the instructive part of that is you set your goals way higher. I mean, that $30,000 was crazy. You know, that I felt would be no problem to do. So I said, "No, you know, we're gonna go way over $100,000 on this thing." And they'd never had a fundraiser that did $100,000 before. So I sat down with with their web person, and I said, "Okay, here's what we need to do. Here's the game plan." It's just basically, to me, it was marketing. It was just now a different group of people. So I used the skill that I had developed and put it to use for a good cause. We came up with an idea of doing matching funds. So, you know, I put up a good chunk of money, and for every dollar somebody donated, I would match that amount. Well, you know, what turned out to be a good idea became this behemoth of a thing where the money I pledged was like gone in a few hours. But then, we wound up having everybody else be because of the stir that we got on there, calling in and giving, you know, huge donations for matching funds, to the point where in a 5-day period we went, it was about $110,000 in a 5-day period, which just amazed them, and they couldn't believe it. Which on the other end, you know, on the aside from, you know, on the philanthropic, you know, that it actually did good for people, you know, what goes around comes around, you know, when you do good things happen for you too. And I honestly believe that. And, you know, out of that, it just, you know, we met a lot of great people and have, you know, a lot of new friends that, you know, we've developed, other people that were, you know, involved in there. And, you know, it's just, you know, it's just great. And now we're working on the next spring's fundraiser, and you know we set the goal at double what we did the previous year. So
nice. Yeah, you know, so that brings up a really interesting point, and I don't know if anyone else has really talked about that on one of our interviews. I've mentioned it before in you know in a way that I think the philanthropy and that whole charitable aspect, it's, you know, you have to do it for the sake of it, not for the secondary reason, like you mentioned, the you know, the new relationships and the new network and the things that happen. But it's amazing the kind of people that you meet that are involved at high levels at the charities, who you really wouldn't have a chance to interact with and get that connection with pretty much any other way. Would you agree?
Oh, absolutely. We got invited to the charity ball, which was, you know, another one of their fundraisers, and the president of Children's, who's a very, very impressive businessman to begin with, he walked to us, up to my wife and I, and introduced himself to us. and I'm like, oh my God, you know. You know, people were standing in line to talk to this guy, and he found out that, you know, we were the people that did that, and he, you know, walked to excuse himself from people that were waiting to meet him, and he came up and introduced himself to us. So, I mean, it's, you know, but I agree with you 100%. If you go into the you know, giving to charities with the expectation of getting gain out of it,
right?
You're first off, you're not going to get what you want. You know, you need to go in with the right idea of helping the charity. The other things happen, but, you know, just let them happen. Don't go in because they're going to happen. And I think that's the most important thing, because I know some people that have, you know, done, well, if I do this, then maybe I can meet this person. No.
Right. It's a bit of a strategy, and you're trying to outthink it, and it doesn't work that way.
Yeah, I look at it as karma. You do good things happen to you, but you know, you're not really doing good things if you're expecting those other results.
Yeah, exactly. No, I think that's interesting, and you know, I love the way that, you know, that you took on that responsibility, and you know, it's another paradigm shift, right? Because they had only done this small amount, and you're like, ah, we're not going to do that. We're going to blow that out of the water, and then you went to work figuring out how to make that happen. Mm-hmm. And it's also another case for, you know, always trying to surround yourself with someone who's hopefully been a little bit further, done a little bit bigger, and gone a little bit higher, because their paradigms are different than yours. So you
I always look at it, you want to be the dumbest guy in the room when you're going to surround yourself with some other people,
mm-hmm.
Because there's so much more to learn. The goals get, you know, set much higher. I joined a mastermind group a while back with a specific reason, because these guys were making a lot more than me. And when I told them, you know how well I'm doing, it was kind of like, okay, you're doing okay. And you know, around other people, I'm like a god, you know, because I'm doing so much better. So it's always better to hang around and associate yourself with people that are just much better, because all of a sudden, you know, now your focus is on much higher value things. And that's, you know, you mentioned it before, my focus really is on high value and high income streams now. So, for example, you know, when I used to do coaching programs for a few hundred dollars, now my coaching program is $9,000, you know, for 2 months.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm doing $8,000 days of consulting now, where before I was like, oh, there's no way. But now I wouldn't sit down with somebody for less than $8,000 for a day. You know, why would I? When, you know, there are people out there that are willing to pay me because I give them some great value to do that. So, you know, I kind of look at things differently because I associate it with different people.
And how did you get yourself in a position where you are that dumbest person in the room? Is it paying to be part of a mastermind? Is it just trying to fill one out yourself? What have you done that has worked?
Well, in that particular case, I stepped up to the plate and joined a mastermind group that would cost me $5,000 a month, because I knew that's where the players were, and that's where I wanted to to be around those people. I think it's important to go to seminars. I think it's important to go to where the people are. I think it's important to kind of crawl out of the shell. I'm kind of out there and in front, and most people don't realize how shy I actually am inside. So, you know, if I go to a new place, I really have to make that effort to go and meet people. But I go and do it because I know that, you know, ultimately that's what I'm there for. So I think it's important to go to those seminars. I think it's important to do whatever you can to talk with people and ask good questions. And start associating, because as you associate with more people, you find out, okay, this is the group I want to be in. I think a mastermind group, I think, is by far the best way to do that, because, you and I, being in, we would have never met had it been for Dan Kennedy's, and I wouldn't have met, so many other people.
Well, we probably would have met, but in a different sort of context and not as big of a connection.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's nobody can just call you up on the phone, and or I shouldn't say nobody. There's very few people that can call you up on the phone and talk with you for a while. Well,
yeah.
Only somebody that's in a mastermind group that you have that personal relationship with, and more friendly and more business relationship. Those are the people that you're going to have a lot more access. People want to kind of, in some cases, I think barge in is the wrong word, but you understand what I mean. They want to kind of go in and do a giant time suck, and they're upset that you don't have time for them. Well, you pay to be in other groups to have that camaraderie and that relationship with different people. So I think masterminds are a great way to do that. Running a mastermind group is another great way to do that.
That's a great point. Yeah, talk about that, and then I'll give you my two cents on it.
Yeah, running a mastermind group is a great way to do that, because I run right now four different mastermind groups, all in varying degrees, mainly because, I like to hear from other people. Even if when you run a mastermind group, it helps to be one of the smarter people in the room. I mean, if you're the dumbest guy in the room and you're running it, it's a little bit difficult, because they quickly see that you shouldn't be in the room. They shouldn't be paying you the money to be in it, but.
Unless you're a really good, exceptional facilitator, but
that is key. You're 100% right, but there are very few people that qualify for that like you.
Yeah,
not saying that you're ever the dumbest guy in the room, Yannick. but running a mastermind group, I think, is a great way. Not only is it a great way to be, it's a great business to be in. And actually, that's one of the new training courses I just developed. Is that I'm doing my first training next month.
How to run your own mastermind groups?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's awesome.
And how to form it, how to get it, how to pick your group, and what to train, and what how to run them. I like doing them, because just sitting in a room and the momentum that builds within the group. You hear a lot of new ideas. Run a local mastermind group, but with some pretty heavy hitters in there. These guys are brilliant in all different areas, and together, it's just like the thing. Together, they all grow, because now I know more about online. I know more about different ways of marketing, or ways of financing, because I have all these people in a mastermind group.
Yeah. So what's interesting is I don't know if I wrote this. I think I read it in the last Maverick Business Insider newsletter or somewhere else, but I talked about being the connection point increases your likelihood for success, and as that, as forming the mastermind group and being the person that runs it, you're the connection point. So anyone that, even from your local area, they come together and you're at that, you know, you're at that crux. And any time that there's something that benefits, it always sort of comes back to you. And it's like, oh, yeah, you know, I was in Ron's mastermind group and we talked about this. Or we, you know, so you get credit in a way and you become that connection point and that glue where it just builds up your network. And so I've done that, and, you know, even putting on seminars and different things like that, there's so many side benefits from doing that. It's incredible. And people can do it in a small way. I mean, if you had a dinner group that met, whatever, once a month or once every other month, of 10, 15 people, you could do it and get some of those amazing benefits right away.
Absolutely. Yeah, I love doing those meetings, and again, because they're never the same. Everybody comes with fresh ideas, and it's a lot of fun. And you're right, as far as being that connection point, there are people that give me way more credit than I really deserve. It's just because they were in that room. I was at one.
Well, yeah, but I mean, but you and I develop those rooms, and you curate them, and so forth. So it does, you know, there is credit to be had there. But it's amazing. And there's a really good book on leadership, all about what's called triading, and I forgot the name of the book now. I think it's called Tribal Leadership, and it talks about the highest level leaders are the ones that are always making connections, and they're always essentially, you know, making introductions, and then so, you know, running those groups or the different things, or a dinner party or a seminar, or even just being a person that widely opens up your Rolodex when it makes sense, it all comes back to you, because then it's like, you know, if you introduce me to someone else, then I'm like, oh, hey, well, you know, how do you know Ron? And you become, you know, that topic of that connection point again, and it elevates you.
Yeah, and just a word to everybody that's listening, because I know some people are, you know, get real excited over that, and other people are like, oh, man, I don't think I could ever do that. You know, if you ever have a reaction like that to anything that you learn of, oh, I don't know whether I can do that, a lot of it is just fear because you don't have all the information, not a fear that you aren't good enough to do that. You may not be good enough to do that right now, but join a couple mastermind groups, watch how they run, meet new people, find out what people want, and then, you know, then start to form your own, because people will pay you for what you know, because that's the most valuable asset you have, is what you know, and in some cases, you know, if you're running a mastermind group, who you know.
Yeah.
People will join to get connected with other people that you're already connected with. So, a great
absolutely. Business. Yeah, don't discount your kind of hidden assets, is what I call them, yeah. and figure out a way to benefit from that. All right, well, I think we covered a whole lot. Where can, if anyone wants to find out more about what you're doing, Ron, or any of the other programs or materials that you have, where should we send them?
Yeah, why don't you just pop over to the website, ronipach.com. It's my name, ronipach.com. And I'll have some information up there on, you know, contact information and, you know, various different things that we do. I'd love to help anybody any way I can.
Yeah, I mean, you're involved in a lot of different things, and certainly the automotive industry for sure. I mean, that's a no-brainer. But it sounds like you have a new course on forming a mastermind and other things that are. And I know you used to have. I don't know if you saw it anymore. We talked about it, that the lifestyle course.
Yeah, the Lazy Man's Guide to a Successful Life. Yeah, if you want to go over to lazysuccessfullife.com, it's a course that we have on outsourcing and kind of, you know, working your business backwards. You know, some of the things we talked about in the very beginning, you know, go over to lazysuccessfullife.com and you can find out some more information on that too.
Nice. Well, I really appreciate it, and as always, it's great to talk to you. And I think you know, the philosophy that you throw out there, from truly living it, is not only an inspiration, but it's a good blueprint for people to look at and follow. And it's done in a way that is not, it's not smoke and mirrors. It's, you know, it's not telling them tomorrow you're going to start and be able to work 30 hours a week. It's, you know, it's true, and it's legitimate, which really makes these conversations fun with you.
Yeah, well, thank you. I appreciate that. It's a little bit of work, but in the end, it pays off.
Absolutely. Great. I look forward to hanging out with you again, getting a little Baja racing, and I'll talk to you soon.